Today on Annenberg Radio News,
California is becoming a kick in the junk.
We meet a security guard whose California dream has turned into a minimum wage struggle. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, April 17th, 2014. I'm Bryony Ng. The numbers are in for the first round of Affordable Care Act enrollment, and they're higher than expected. President Obama announced today that 8 million Americans signed up for private care. Nearly 1.4 million of those are Californians. Stephanie Case has more.
Tuesday at midnight marked the end of Covered California's 6.5-month open enrollment period for health insurance. Close to 1.5 million Californians signed up for private insurance, and nearly 2 million got Medi-Cal coverage. The number surpassed expectations due to a last-minute surge in signups. The original March 31st deadline was pushed back when call centers and computer systems couldn't handle the flood of people. More than 205,000 people signed up during that two-week extension, with 50,000 enrolling in the last day alone. President Obama says this high turnout is great for the country.
The bottom line is, under the Affordable Care Act, the share of Americans with insurance is up, the growth of healthcare costs is down. No American with a pre-existing condition like asthma or cancer can be denied coverage. No woman can be charged more just for being a woman. Those days are over. And this thing is working.
Obama also said he's looking towards the future and hopes Republicans opposing the Affordable Care Act will do the same instead of appealing the system.
We've been having a political fight about this for 5 years. We need to move on to something else. That's what the American people are interested in. I think that Democrats should forcefully defend and be proud of the fact that millions of people were helping because of something we did. I think there is a strong, good, right story to tell.
Obama says as this chapter closes, he'll focus his sights on job creation and building up the middle class. Stephanie Case, Annenberg Radio News.
Industrial-related deaths that happen in Los Angeles County may be prosecuted quicker because of a new change announced today. As Sam Dawn reports, L.A. District Attorney Jackie Lacey announced the new program at a morning news conference.
Let's say you're at work and you find out your company has polluted the local river. What do you do? You'd have to wait for a state investigation. Then, when investigators have gathered enough evidence, they would refer it to the district attorney for prosecution. Today, District Attorney Jackie Lacey changed that in L.A. County.
We're here today to unveil the new OSHA and Environmental Crimes Rollout Program. This program is designed to protect the health and safety of all Los Angeles County residents.
Lacey made today's announcement, flanked by representatives of various Los Angeles County police and fire departments. From now on, first responders will alert the DA's office when industrial accidents happen. For District Attorney Lacey, it isn't just an issue of fairness. It's one of economics. Lacey says that companies that cut corners on safety have an inherent economic advantage, and those that follow the rules find it hard to compete. With this program, she intends to erase that edge.
Today, we are committing more resources to enforcing environmental and workplace safety laws and leveling the playing field for businesses that comply with the law.
As of this morning, district attorney staff had already visited four sites whose names they couldn't disclose due to pending litigation. Sam Dorn, Annenberg Radio News.
The Easter Bunny paid a surprise visit to the California Hospital Medical Center today to hand out gifts and brighten the days of some little ones. Lenza Bagala has the story.
The LA County Sheriff Department joined with the Easter Bunny and hopped over to the California Hospital Medical Center in downtown today to hand out gifts to kids and babies who won't be able to spend Easter with their families. As cameras and spectators stood by, the Easter Bunny went room to room, giving little ones presents. 10-year-old Nadia says it was a great surprise. She also said the Easter Bunny has good taste in gifts.
I think it's beautiful. I think I like it because my favorite color is pink, and the Easter Bunny that he gave me was pink.
Nadia's mother, Angie Gomez, says although it's just a surprise for her daughter, it means even more to her.
And I'm just very grateful that they're doing this for the kids, especially kids like her. And this year she wasn't going to get to go to her dad's house and do the Easter hunt. But this was I think it was a better surprise, right?
Some very little ones were paid a visit too. People stood awing as the Easter Bunny gave each infant a miniature Easter Bunny and a furry kiss. Sheriff Al Frejo says that although he's done this for the past 9 years, it feels just as worthwhile every year.
To see the energy and the joy and the laughter and the happiness that comes to them, it makes it brand new every year.
Looks like the Easter Bunny is egging on a lot of joy this holiday. Lensa Bogala, Annenberg Radio News.
Today marks the 44th anniversary of Apollo 13's safe return to Earth following its near disaster ending. Apollo 13 was a 1970 moon landing mission commissioned by NASA's Apollo space program. The program ran from 1961 until 1972. Apollo 13 launched on April 11, 1970. It ran into trouble after an oxygen tank exploded. It damaged the craft's crucial operating systems, endangering the lives of the crew members, James Lovell, John Swigert, and Fred Hayes. NASA announced today that its Kepler telescope has found a new planet named Kepler-186f. So far, the planet is the only one scientists have found that has a similar mass to Earth. It lies in the habitable zone, which means it could potentially support liquid water or even life. Researchers say the planet could be considered an Earth cousin, and the next step in the search for life is finding an Earth twin. Now for the weather. It'll still be partly cloudy tomorrow and Saturday, with highs of around 70. By Sunday, we should be seeing more blue skies and sunshine, and temperatures up to 77 degrees. Later on Annenberg Radio News, find out how drones are complicating the relationship between Pakistan and the United States. Now we continue our series looking at the people who make Los Angeles run, the night shift workers, the minimum wage employees, and the undocumented laborers. In the eighth part of this series, reporter Angie Fiedler Sutton tells us a more personal story. She introduces us to her husband, Rich, a night shift security guard, and tells us what his minimum wage job has meant for them as a couple.
This place reminds me of a cemetery. It's quiet. There's the monuments to past lives. I mean, you look at these cars that have been crushed up or that have been involved in a traumatic accident, and you know they're not going to be cars anymore.
Rich Sutton is a night security guard patrolling a vehicle impound lot.
I mean, I've seen Cadillacs come in that have been crushed down smaller than some subcon packs, and I know that car's life is done. And there's some serenity about that.
This is a place where vehicles go to when they've been in accidents and when they've been abandoned. It's a place of broken down dreams, but with the rare chance that those dreams can be fixed. It's a place Rich relates to far too easily, as I should know. Why? Because I've lived it. You see, Rich is also my husband.
Well, right now I'm kicking the fence to make sure the places where it's bolted down hasn't gotten loose so people could push it over and get in and out. So what I do in a night is roughly every 30 to 45 minutes I check the video monitors, making sure there's no activity on the lot. But the monitors sometimes don't give the whole story. So you physically have to leave the guard booth and walk down between the rows of vehicles and along the fence line to make sure no one's crawled under or over the fence.
Last July, we came to California to follow a dream. My dream, getting my master's degree. To do that, I quit my temp job and Rich quit his manager job at a security firm. We had friends and lives back in Kansas City, but had agreed that this was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for adventure.
Hey, I'm going to be putting some onions in this. How are you feeling about that tonight?
That's good.
Okay.
My financial aid covered some of the cost of living, but not everything. Things got tight after a couple of months when Rich couldn't find a job right away. We were getting our groceries from food pantries and had to borrow money from friends and family just to pay rent.
It should be about 5 minutes.
His inability to find a job strained our relationship. The stress of moving out here, of whether or not following my dream will be worth the financial burden, and of whether or not I'll even be able to succeed, made Rich's job problems just one more level of tension for us.
I tried not to be picky. I really just wanted something. Because sitting at home, not helping out, it hurt. It was one of the most painful things. When I said when we came out here, I'd do whatever it takes to make things work out, and then became part of the problem, it killed part of me. So when I got a chance to do security, I leapt at it. And it's funny because I'm still looking for other stuff. It's one of those things that's becoming... California's becoming a kick in the junk.
If you could be doing any job that you wanted, what would it be?
If I could do anything, I want to be happy.
And what would make you happy?
To be honest, these days, being happy, I'm looking for it still. I had dreams, and they kind of gone away.
In the end, I have to deal with the fact that Rich didn't move out here to be a security guard. He moved out here for me, for my dream.
I couldn't imagine leaving my arm in Kansas City, let alone letting my heart go to Los Angeles. Being with you makes me feel like I have purpose. Making you a cup of Kool-Aid or sitting through a really bad movie or waiting for the trains to go by. The best part of my day is when I'm with you.
We're still waiting to see if our dreams can be fixed. In the end, it's really all we can hope for. Angie Fiedler-Sutton, Annenberg Radio News.
Easter is just around the corner for those who celebrate the holiday. JJ Maldonado talks to USC students to find out how they spend the day.
Holy Thursday kicks off this religious weekend. Tomorrow is Good Friday and the Easter Vigil on Sunday. Some students say they spend the holiday with their families or going to church together.
I'm Catholic, so we usually go to church in the afternoon and then we'll go out to a family dinner, maybe at a nice restaurant with my grandparents, and just use it as a time not only to be spiritual but also to be together.
I'll be celebrating it at my home parish, St. Philip's.
I have a couple really young cousins, and we'll probably do an Easter egg hunt for them.
Eating will be one common tradition shared by many.
We have a lot of meat. I think there's like chicken. We'll have chicken. We'll have green bean casserole.
I have a Filipino family, so we have a lot of pancit, lumpia.
We all sort of go out to brunch.
While many will be hiding eggs and having dinner together, Easter Sunday still remains the most important Christian holiday. JJ Maldonado, Annenberg Radio News.
The relationship between the U.S. and Pakistan has been a complicated one over the past few years, especially after the capture of Osama bin Laden in 2011 and America's use of drones in Pakistan. After a discussion at USC's Center on Public Diplomacy, I spent a few minutes with Cameron Munter, former U.S. ambassador to Pakistan. He explained why the relationship is so complicated and what needs to happen for it to improve. Hello, Cameron.
Hello, Bryony. Great to be here.
Thanks for joining us on the show today. Cameron, can you give us an overview of U.S.-Pakistani relations?
The main point is that they have a troubled history of misunderstandings on both sides. And these misunderstandings kind of came to a head in 2011 when I was ambassador, when it became clear that we had real differences of approach. I think now we're in a new phase, and I hope that it can be one that's more productive.
Why do you think that mutual respect has been so elusive in the past?
It's a very good question. It's not for lack of trying. There are many Pakistanis of goodwill and Americans of goodwill who've tried to build the relationship in a positive way. And in fact, there are great friendships between our countries. That said, what we've had in the past is a relationship of the Americans being people who are funding Pakistan. If we can come to a place where we find that we have mutual interests and there's a simple sense that not one of us or the other of us is in charge, it could help the self-confidence of Pakistanis and it could help the humility of Americans.
What's the U.S. doing in Pakistan with a drones policy?
The real issue here is counterterrorism. How do we and the Pakistanis fight terror? Pakistanis have had an estimated 40 to 50,000 victims of terror since 9/11, and 4,000 or so soldiers have died in the fight. That's more soldiers than we have lost with all of our allies in Afghanistan. So let's make no mistake, the Pakistanis have suffered under terror as well. The point is, are we fighting terror and the terrorists in the most effective way? The best way would be to do it together. A tool in that fight would be drones. The way we've done it so far is it's instead become an item of discord between us. I think it's key that our leaders in the military and intelligence and in politics get together with their leaders in all three of these areas and agree on a way to use this weapon that's most effective. One of the ways that would be useful would be to really look hard at the secrecy that we have used in drones, because it may be that if we can adjust our policy on secrecy, we can not only fight terror, but we can avoid some of the public diplomacy difficulties that we've had with drones.
In your opinion, what are the three priorities that need to happen to improve the U.S.-Pakistani relationship?
Big, big, big questions, and they're tied into other questions that are not just up to Americans and Pakistanis. The first will be that we will all watch the end of the conflict in Afghanistan and hope that however it turns out at the end of 2014, that it allows us to cooperate better on the security situation, because fixing the security situation in Pakistan doesn't solve all their problems. But if they don't fix the security situation, these other issues that I'm talking about, business, exchanges, opening up regionally, they are going to be hindered because of the terrorism problem. Second is that the Pakistani-India relationship remains on even keel and continues to improve. Finally, there's the issue of the broader kind of policy adjustment so that when we work with Pakistan, there aren't the hurt feelings that we've had in the past, that we haven't been able to achieve something that seems to have been promised, that we are realistic in a way that we can actually achieve some things that have eluded us in the past.
Cameron Munter, former U.S. ambassador to Pakistan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
The literature world is in mourning today. Jenna Pittaway brings us this story about the loss of a well-loved novelist.
Nobel Prize-winning author Gabriel Garcia Marquez died today. Macarena Gomez-Barry researches Latin American literature and politics at the University of Southern California.
The legacy of Gabriel Garcia Marquez is really that he was widely read globally. People are calling him, or have called him, the greatest living writer since Cervantes.
Barry says Garcia Marquez was a master of a literary style called magical realism.
Magic realism is the style that kind of sees magical elements in order to be able to, you know, explain certain aspects of reality.
The style originated in Latin America and was a hallmark of Garcia Marquez's works, such as 100 Years of Solitude and Love in the Time of Cholera. Garcia Marquez died at his home in Mexico. He was 87. Jenna Pittaway, Annenberg Radio News.
TJ Barry is an aspiring actress at the University of Southern California. Ella Bernal talks to the actress about the challenges and successes of being yourself versus being somebody else.
What's your least favorite character that you've ever had to play?
Least favorite character? You know, I don't know if I have any, because I think no matter what the character is, like no matter how random and kind of outside of your comfort zone it is, the better it is. My favorite characters are usually ones that I don't relate to at all. You get to try to wrap your mind around what it would be like to be that f***ed up and like try to experience that. And that's like a crazy, fun, scary thing to do.
So when you do that, do you have to find things that you relate to?
Honestly, it's, for me, it's a lot of thinking. Like, a really easy way to like try to get yourself naturally into character is when you're going through your everyday life, you know how you have like an internal monologue, you're thinking, okay, I have this class and that, I have to write this paper, when I get home, I really don't want to call this person, it's going to be a shitty conversation, da 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 da. You have to think of all these things that you have to do. Instead of thinking your inner monologue, try to go through your day thinking your character's inner monologue. And it's really like, for example, right now I'm in solo performance and I had to write a monologue.
Heard it or read it?
I hope my mom never sees it because I don't think she quite, I don't know if she could handle it. I think if she ever saw how I like really felt about it, it would kind of destroy her.
So I guess then your performance is more for you.
Yeah, no, definitely. I feel like most of the performances that I do like are for me. I get like this really great feeling of like catharsis when I like do a self-expression like that, because I feel like it's like I'm taking something off of my chest and like giving it to other people. And not in like a here, take my burden kind of way, just in like an I'm free kind of way. There's nothing more beautiful than when somebody is vulnerable. And that's what a lot of theater is based around generally. Anyways, there's a concept of like the fourth wall, which is the wall between the actor and the audience. And it's supposed to be that there's an invisible wall there. Like the actor doesn't see the audience, but the audience sees the actor. And that gives the audience like a fly on the wall perspective. They get to like see into somebody's intimate moments when it's absolutely none of their business. Because deep down, everybody is a voyeur. Everybody wants to see and wants to know. It's none of their business to a certain extent. So like, that's what theater is. You get to see an argument between a husband and a wife and you don't even know them. I feel like, I guess, being an artist is a really selfish lifestyle because it's so introspective and expressionistic. It's all about, like, who you are and what you have to give and what you have to say. And in that way, it is kind of self-absorbed. But I guess, hopefully, in your message, in your self-absorbed creation process, you can create something that inspires other people and it has a ripple effect so that you do affect and help other people in the long run.
That was Ella Bernal talking with actress TJ Barry. You've played bingo before, but not quite like this. Victor Figueroa ate a guacamole burger at Hamburger Mary's while watching bingo players get their groove on.
Let's try that together. What's the name of the game?
Bingo!
How do we play it?
At Hamburger Mary's in West Hollywood, bingo night isn't just a time for old people to win a little extra cash. On Wednesday and Sunday nights, Bingo Boy and one of his drag queen co-hosts take the ball-bearing pastime and put a sexual spin on it. Prizes vary from movies, nail polish, and cupcake mix.
Bill, you won the Brazilian package. Seems like it should be bigger.
The winner must run from one end of the restaurant to the other, so bingo losers can get their moment of joy by crumpling up their cards and throwing them at the champ.
Oh, Kristen, you got 10 in your box. How does it feel? Good. Can you still run?
Yes.
Well, you're going to have to go. Pelter, pelter, all the way down, all the way back. Pelter.
How many of you are here for the first time? First-timers, raise your hand. First-timers. Like, this whole side of the room are bingo virgins, and this whole side of the room are bingo whores.
That's Jeffrey Bowman, also known as Bingo Boy.
It's on! No, it's not! No, it's not! Shenanigans!
And his drag queen co-host for tonight, Roxy Wood, who loves performing.
Of course, I love being on stage. I love, you know, the fun that bingo is. I mean, it's exciting. We throw stuff, we yell, we sing, you know. People are drinking, people are eating, people are crying, they're laughing, it's everything.
I'm gonna hit you with it like this.
It's a rambunctious crowd. Margaritas, burgers, and laughs are plentiful, but they're also supporting a charity. Bowman created some of the first AIDS benefits in the Los Angeles area, and in 1998 started Legendary Bingo to get the younger generation into charity work.
One of my goals was to get younger people involved in fundraising, and the way to do that was to give them an inexpensive, cool thing to do. And nobody was really doing it. I look out and it's all kids in their 20s, and not all, but you know, I think it works. You can have a good time and you can raise money for charity and it feels really good.
Bowman's whole family is involved in charity, but it's his Baptist minister grandfather who was the biggest influence on him.
He was really cool. He wasn't one of those preacher men. He was a preacher, but His whole thing was he just treated everybody great. He would go to the prisons and he'd visit the prisoners and he'd go to the hospitals. And he was such an influence on me as far as that it feels good to do good.
Ultimately, Bowman hopes for one thing to come to mind when a customer wakes up in a daze the next morning.
Somehow I want them to remember that they saved an animal's life the night before by being here, or they helped build a playground for a disabled kid, and they get a really cool, glowy feeling of like, hey, I did something good. Now I need some aspirin because I have a hangover.
And while taking their aspirin, customers can groan in joy in helping charities like AIDS Project Los Angeles, the Wellness Community, and the Holly Rod Foundation. Victor Figueroa, Annenberg Radio News.
What's the name of the game? Yeah. How do we play it, Johnny? Johnny, if you fall one more time.
Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City! Sonic City!
I'm in the California Science Center, and what I like best is to come and see the Endeavor. I really enjoy it. I come like every 2 months over here with my kids.
All of the elements in the universe are created by exploding stars.
I'm at the California Science Center. My favorite thing is the earthquake part, but I don't really get scared that much.
Almost everything you see around you came from dying stars.
South Los Angeles is getting a taste of Jamie Oliver's food revolution, where experienced chefs teach locals how to cook smart and eat healthily. Stephanie Monty reports from the Big Rig Kitchen, hosted outside the MLK Junior Patient Center in Compton.
We're going to stack our basil leaves together. Cheapest place to get them in town. Just like you're doing.
The wellness and diabetes group from the MLK Outpatient Center climbed on board to take part in the food revolution. Classes were held inside a fully equipped, mobile Big Rig Kitchen. There were just 4 students for each teacher. This made it easier for participants to really get a hands-on experience. The lesson today? Fish Made Easy includes a basic red sauce, sautéed with garlic, olives, and basil, baked over a white fish, and served with what the cooks called brilliant broccoli. Caroline Snow is one of the instructors and explains some of the steps from today's recipe.
We're using the canned tomato sauce here on the rig, but you can use fresh tomatoes, and with summer season coming and growing new gardens, it's great to pick your tomatoes and puree them and then use that. And then we're making the sauce, putting the fish with it, and baking it for a few minutes. It bakes very quickly.
The Food Revolution Project started in May 2011. Lessons were oriented toward young people, but most of the classes are mixed with both adults and children. Scott Bottomer, operations manager of the Jamie Oliver Food Foundation, said South LA is one of the 14 communities in California that they have identified with high rates of obesity and diabetes.
We're here because this has been identified as a community that has some significant issues when it comes to fresh food access and the health-related issues that go along with a diet that predominantly consists of processed foods and fast foods, which is why we're here.
The 40-week tour started in Fresno, is now in Los Angeles, and will wrap up in San Diego. Friday, May 16th will be the third annual Food Revolution Day, where the Jamie Oliver Foundation will try to set a Guinness Book of World Records by having the highest number of people cooking the same dish they call the Rainbow Wrap. Classes will continue in South LA until Friday, April 21st, but the Food Revolution will continue to serve communities across the state one plate at a time. Stephanie Monty, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we check in with Camille Requiestas to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hi, Camille.
Hi, Bryony. Chelsea Clinton made a big announcement today why she says she wants to be just like her mom. And parents wait in anguish for news on their children stuck inside the capsized ferry in South Korea. We have one mother's regret. Tune in to ATVN at 6 on Channel 8.1.
Thanks, Camille.
Thank you.
That's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Sarah Zahedi. Our production assistant is Lexi McAvinci. The newscast producer is Victor Figueroa. Our executive producer is Catherine Davis. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Bryony Ng.